Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Andrew. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. It sounds like we're going to get Daniel Bryan against Okada.
Yeah, I saw that today. That was a pretty cool video. Pretty big news, too.
Yeah. Forbidden Door, it's always one of these weird shows. It was weird last year. It kind of felt like, I remember talking about it last summer with you, and it was like it kind of disrupted the whole flow of AEW because all of a sudden it's like, well, everything stopped because we're going to promote this interpromotional show for the next month. But if they're going to do that again, but they're going to headline with Bryan and Okada, like, okay, yeah, I'll deal with everything stopping for a month if I'm going to get to see that, because that's something that I think none of us thought we would ever see, but here we are.
I agree with that. Yeah, I was really critical as well of how they handled it last year. And I get, like, if you're going to do it, then you have to at least deliver a big match that everyone wants to see. And they were, unable to do that last year. I mean, we did get Okada, but it was in kind of like that thrown together four-man match that they didn't even announce until really close to when the show was going to happen. But yeah, if they're going to run Okada, Danielson, and they're actually giving us 20-some days to get excited, like, that's a huge improvement over what they did last year.
Yeah, what do you think of the way that they, I guess you could say, started the build to Forbidden Door with TV this past week? I mean, it wasn't a total reset. Like, last year it felt like they almost pressed pause on the rest of the company and then jumped into Forbidden Door for a month and then jumped back into AEW again. It wasn't as egregious this time around. It didn't feel like kind of a clean pause button being pushed, but it definitely felt like, you know, they're starting to trend towards that pay-per-view now, which they need to. I mean, it's a month away.
Yeah, I mean, I think it seemed more natural this time around too, just because there's the built-in storyline with Kenny Omega and Don Callis, and, you know, they're saying, you know, there's the tease that he's out of the country, so I'm assuming he's going to go get a New Japan wrestler to team with him. So, like, that all ties in, and it's like a natural extension of the storyline they're doing now, whereas last year, say, just take, like, Chris Jericho, they just, again, like, threw together a bunch of wrestlers without much of a storyline, and it was kind of like that up and down the card, and it was tricky. It's like, you know, what do you do? Like, almost just ignore storylines and just, like, throw together a dream match, a dream card, or, you know, do you kind of like try and build storylines and introduce the American audience to all these wrestlers and who they are? So I felt last year they did a bad job of it. And so far, I mean, we still got a few weeks, but definitely a better start this time around.
Yeah, it felt like last year it was more of a, we need to throw this together quickly and we don't have any other, because it kind of came together quickly.
Yeah.
So it all felt like it was almost kind of thrown together last year. And like, a lot of the follow-up was bad. Like, again, we talked about Wardlow last week, but, like, he had that big win. He beat MJF at the pay-per-view last year, and then he was just forgotten about for months. Like, he just disappeared. There was no follow-up at all. Biggest win of the guy's career, and he vanished. That wasn't the case this year, because, like you said, they did. And I think it's just because Tony had more time to get prepared for it to make sure that the Forbidden Door storylines are more woven into what they were doing week to week, heading into Double or Nothing, and then obviously coming out of Double or Nothing. So it does seem like it's going to be a little more seamless in that regard. Because last year it felt like the entire company was pressed pause for a month, and then Forbidden Door was over, and we went back to regularly scheduled programming again.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, one of the big matches on last year's card was Jon Moxley and Tanahashi, and they really tried to sell that, like, the last couple weeks, but I think, you know, if you're not like a hardcore New Japan fan, you're just like, I don't know who this guy is. So it was, you know, like, there's a lot of people out there who just have no idea who Tanahashi is. But even though it may be a dream match for some, and I don't think the company did a good job of building that up. So they're off to a much better start this time around. I mean, I watched that video with Danielson, like, kind of calling out Okada, and yeah, just right that there got me like, okay, like there's a lot going on in AEW. There's a lot of shows coming up. We got Collision coming up, but that's pretty big for what they're doing.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, like, because everybody gets upset when we talk about the casual fan. and AEW does have a pretty hardcore base, but I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people that don't know who these New Japan guys are that are in AEW's audience among the 900,000 people that are watching the show every week. And the reason I say that is because if people knew exactly who these guys were, AEW might not exist because New Japan Pro Wrestling would be the number two company in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's people that have kind of a loose awareness of who some of these guys are, but maybe aren't real familiar with them. And then there's the hardcores that know, you know, everything about Okada and everything about Tanahashi. And then there's going to be people that among, I think, honestly, the vast majority of the 900,000 people that are watching Dynamite on a weekly basis have no idea who these guys are. And they may have heard of New Japan, but they've never heard of anybody in New Japan. Again, because like I said, if more people had enough of an awareness of who these guys are, New Japan, they're in the United States. Like they do shows in the U.S. They've got a streaming service. They would be the number two company in the U.S. They'd be on TV. That isn't Access TV. They'd be doing great numbers. They would be doing what AEW is doing if their audience was the same size. So there does have to be a level of education from Tony's standpoint, from AEW's standpoint, in selling who these guys are. The pay-per-view was great last year. It did great business, all that stuff. I'm sure it will again. But you can't just cater to the real diehards. And that's kind of what this show does. And I think that was the counterpoint to the criticism that we had last year was, look, this show is only for the diehards. Well, okay, that's fine, but they're spending a month of TV time building it up. So you need to do enough to get the casual viewer who people don't seem to want to invest in. Like, the hardcore fans get upset when we say they need to cater more to the casual viewer, which I can understand because you're like, well, that doesn't, you know, that might not be entertaining to me. Well, it's what's going to grow the company. Like, because at some point you need to do that or else you stay very, very small. So that's where I think, and it seems like so far, again, it's been 1 week, like you said, but they're doing a better job of educating people on why this is important and who these guys are so that hopefully when you get to the pay-per-view, everybody knows what's going on and can follow it.
Yeah, and you talk about, like, just promoting to the hardcore fan and, like, if that worked. I mean, you know, it's only one example, but, you know, look at Rampage this past Friday. Like, that was completely built to the hardcore fan without any – like, they had Zack Sabre Jr. on the show, who I believe has only had a couple matches on AEW TV, but he's, like, a pretty big deal in the wrestling world, but they did nothing to build him up whatsoever. And, like, and Shibata, too, was on the show, and same thing. The ratings, I believe, were down 18% from the previous week. Again, just one-time thing, but if this was, like, a huge thing that people were excited for and Sabre and Shibata had been built up better, like, I imagine you could have done a better rating.
I think so. Yeah, for sure. And it's just, again, I think it's – and I get it sometimes. I get it from Tony's standpoint, and this is where I think he needs more people involved. You don't want too many people involved when it comes to booking the show, but I think he needs more than just him. And it sounds like he's getting that help, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I think it can be really hard from Tony's standpoint with 900 things happening and going on in the four full-time jobs that he has to not see past your periphery, right? Like, it's real easy to just kind of have tunnel vision with this stuff. And he sits there and goes, well, like, of course everybody – I know who Okada is. Of course everybody knows who Okada is. Well, they don't. They just don't. I'm sorry. Like, not in the United States. So I think that's where someone helping him out a little bit could improve some of this stuff because I'm sure he looked at that Rampage show, and like you said, yeah, I can look at a Zack Sabre Jr. match and be like, yeah, this is going to be great. I can't wait because I know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody knew who Zack Sabre Jr. was, he'd be on U.S. television every week already. You know, it wouldn't be a special attraction. So, and that's not a knock on him. He should be on TV every week.
For sure.
Nobody has signed him yet. But again, like it goes back to when new people get brought into territories back in the 80s or when someone comes up from WWE developmental, you know, now or 20 years ago when someone jumped from WCW to WWE or vice versa. there was always vignettes. There was an educational period so that you could educate the viewer on who it was they were seeing and why should we care about this person. And I think sometimes with Tony, it's just like, yeah, everybody knows who Zack Sabre Jr. is because I do. And it's like, well, no, that's not always the case. It just feels like that's a trap he gets stuck in sometimes. And I can see where he does because, again, he's got 900 things to do.
Yeah, it would be like, and maybe this isn't a great analogy, but, you know, like ECW was going on at the time and the hardcore fans like knew who they were. But when Bischoff brought in guys like Jericho and Benoit and Malenko, he didn't go like, oh, this is a dream match. I'm going to have them face off against Hulk Hogan and Roddy Piper. Like, yeah. It probably wouldn't have done very well. But he, you know, and he probably could have done a better job, obviously, like pushing those guys. But he brought them in, like introduced them to the fans, gave them storylines, and like built them up a bit. But yeah, I'm just saying, like, from an unfamiliar standpoint, it would be like kind of doing something like that, bringing in these great wrestlers, but like having them face off against like top stars right away and people just being like, I have no idea who these people are.
Yeah. And you know, what's funny too, is I think ECW is a good point. ECW and it's, the scale is way different because AEW is way bigger than ECW ever was. Yeah. But there's a reason why ECW never got any bigger than what it was. It was because it catered to a very hardcore niche audience. And they were never able to outgrow that because that's who they were targeting. And in a way, AEW does the same thing on a bigger scale. Right, obviously on a bigger scale because AEW is way bigger now than ECW ever was. Still, like, their booking direction at times reminds me of the same thing, where they kind of cater to a certain segment of their audience. Whereas in ECW's case, it was their whole audience. Their whole audience was the hardcore audience, right? Or their hardcore diehard fans. There was really no gray area. You either loved ECW or you hated it, and they, rightfully so, catered to the people who loved it, but it's also why the audience never really grew. And AEW has a much bigger audience, but it feels like they cater to the hardcore, which, again, like, I don't mind you doing 85% of the time, but there needs to be just a little bit within the show. I think, let me put it this way, I think you can cater to both. Like, I think you can put on matches that AEW fans want to see. Like, everyone's going to freak out about Bryan Danielson. I think I said Daniel Bryan earlier in the show. But everyone's going to freak out. Yeah, me too. I think everyone's going to freak out about Bryan Danielson against Okada. It's going to be a giant match, huge match. The hardcore diehard fans who are way invested in this stuff are going to be going ballistic over this match. You can book that match, which is going to cater to that fan base, but also spend time on television explaining who Okada is and explaining to the people that have no idea why it's important, why it's so important. And the diehard, the fans that don't know any better, who are learning about this guy for the first time, are going to go, geez, okay, good. I feel more invested in this match. I know why it's important now. I know who this guy is. And the diehards are going to go, what a great segment that was on Okada, even though they knew everything about him anyway. If you produce it well and you present it and it's good television, those fans are still going to be, you know, doing backflips over it. So there are ways where you could cater to both.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I think that's something they've struggled with, I mean, yeah, since the beginning. And the things that, like, draw fans in the most over the years is storylines and, you know, AEW, as we've talked about, like, that seems like second priority for them. It's the matches just over and over again. And hell, like, I love good matches, but, like, as we've said before, it's like storylines is what brought us into professional wrestling. Yes. So, I mean, more stuff like the BCC and Elite, like, I think that's going well, and that's, like, a storyline that people can follow. And, you know, less just throwing two really good wrestlers together. Because, you know, I was watching Rampage this past week, and it was a good show, but I just, like, kept having the thoughts at times of, like, you know, why do I care? Why do I care who wins? Like, why do I care if Vikingo wins? I'm sure I butchered his name. But, like, you know, he's rarely ever on AEW TV. He's facing, like, two other guys who are rarely ever on TV. There's no storylines behind any of these guys. I don't even think they're AEW talent. They're just kind of, like, showing up. And, you know, what does it matter, like, if one guy wins? Because I have, like, no emotional investment in any of these guys from a storyline standpoint.
Exactly. I mean, I look back to I was watching a clip the other day. Somebody I saw, I don't know if it was Twitter or TikTok or something. I saw somebody had a clip of like, oh, this has happened 25 years ago today. And it was Dude Love against Stone Cold Steve Austin. Backlash 1999 match. There was 900 run-ins. It was completely overbooked.
Yeah.
But the place, like the roof was coming off the building. You look at the NWO, like most guys in the NWO couldn't wrestle. They were old, broken down, and beat up. Like Hulk Hogan in the NWO was a terrible wrestler, right?
Yeah.
He could barely move. He had surgeries and everything else, and he was 45 years old. But those shows were electric, and like those angles at the end of those Nitros were insane, and people were going nuts because it was a story people could believe in. Kevin Nash, again, like he could barely walk. Like he wasn't this great wrestler, but though, especially at the beginning, like those three guys, and Scott Hall was, but those three guys at the very beginning, like they dominated the show. And it wasn't because they were great wrestlers. It was all because of the story that was driven behind it. And Austin, I mean, Austin was a good brawler by the time he became Stone Cold. He was a really good wrestler when he was younger. By the time he became Stone Cold, he had a neck injury, a serious neck injury. He was wearing double knee braces because he had bad knees. He made it work, but he was kind of just a brawler. He wasn't out there having five-star matches. So, you know, it's one of those – so what sold it was the character that sold people. That's what drew people in. And I'm not saying you're going to recreate Stone Cold Steve Austin or the NWO. That's really hard to do. But what my point is the hottest period in pro wrestling ever, there were very few five-star matches. I'm not sure I can think of one. Like, it was very, very few, right?
Yeah.
But it was the hottest time ever in the business because the stories were so good. And I know that sounds a lot like He Who Shall Not Be Named in saying, like, oh, it's not – there needs to be both elements there. Because, like, you ask Vince Russo and he'll tell you that the wrestling doesn't matter and it's all about the stories. And that's, you know, that's BS too.
Yeah.
Especially because his version of stories are like, oh, Mae Young gave birth to a hand. Like, that's – nobody cares about that. But there's big angles that people will get invested in. And I agree. I think, you know, look at, like, the Punk MJF angle from 2 years ago or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. One of the best things they ever did in the company.
Yep.
I agree with you that this Elite versus BCC feud has been very well booked and very well put together. One of the best things they've done in the company. Those are the things that stand out to me. Yes, there have been excellent matches, but what I remember more when I look back at AEW are some of the angles and some of the stories that they told, not just some of the great matches that they've had. And they've had a lot of them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they've had hundreds probably at this point of good matches. But, yeah, if you go, you know, just to, like, go talk about the NWO. If you put Hogan at age, 43, whatever he was in the NWO, if you put him in AEW right now, he would, bar none, be the worst wrestler by far.
Not even close. Not even close.
If you took Rock at his peak in, I don't know, 1999, from a pure athletic, you know, in-ring talent standpoint, I don't think he'd be top 40 in AEW.
I agree.
Yeah, there's 40, 50, 60 wrestlers more talented in the ring just from, like, a pure technical standpoint than The Rock. But, like, yeah, from years from now, like, that's not what people are going to look back on. Like, it's those storylines, it's those characters. And, yeah, we say it a lot, but, like, man, it's – I wish they would just focus more on that, and I think, you know, they would just be better off overall.
I would argue that was the draw with Punk. Like, when Punk first came back, his matches weren't great.
Right.
Yeah, he was slow. He was trying to just – get a feel for it again. He hadn't wrestled in like 9 years or whatever it was. So like it took a while for him to get going. And by the time we got to Double or Nothing a year ago, like the MJF match was good. The Moxley match was good, but there was a lot of matches in there that weren't very good, but people were still way invested in CM Punk because they were way invested in the character that was CM Punk. CM Punk, you know, in AEW wasn't any, I think even he would tell you this, it was not anywhere near the caliber of wrestler that he was when he left WWE. That's to be expected. He's been hurt. He's 10 years older. But people were still invested in him to the point where he main evented their two biggest pay-per-views of the year last year.
I would say, for me personally, like the best match in AEW history so far might be Cody Rhodes versus Dustin Rhodes. And that has...
from the first Double or Nothing.
Yeah. And so maybe that has not been topped to this point. I would say the only thing, you know... And neither guy was doing, like, crazy flips. I mean, Dustin Rhodes probably busted out his, his Canadian destroyer, I'm sure. But, like, that match was not built around stuff like that. Like, that was built around, like, a good storyline. Yeah, an emotion. And it was a large, you know, just a brawl, a bloody brawl. And that was, you know, that still stands out in my mind. If probably the best match, I would say, that I was at least most invested in to this point.
Yeah. No, 100%. I think that's right up there for me, too. Let's go to phones. I want to talk more about kind of the booking direction and Tony maybe getting some help booking in a little bit. If you're listening live, 515-605-9345 is the number. If you're not listening live but you do want to give us a call the next time we record, we do so on Monday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern, and all you got to do is dial 515-605-9345, and you can get on the phone, or you can email us all elite@gmail.com. But let's go to – oh, the number just clicked out here when I clicked on it. Caller, you heard a beep. If you heard a beep, you're up next. What's up?
AJ from Miami. How you doing?
Hey. What's up? How you doing?
How are you guys doing? I don't know. I was watching it last week, and I don't know. A Jungle Boy just, I can't with Jungle Boy. He's too mopey or whatever, but at the end of the day, I feel like, look, Jungle Boy can be a definitely good heel, like a dominant kind of heel. He can act like he's a rich, spoiled kid. I mean, his girlfriend, for God's sakes, is a heel. She was with Jericho, for God's sakes. It's like, bro, you're not... I don't know. It's just like he tried to fire up in his promos. He couldn't do it. He needs a mouthpiece. If Anna Jay's there, she can be his mouthpiece. He would be a great heel. He's an okay wrestler, but babyface, it's not going to happen. I just can't with him. It's just like Adam Cole, same thing. It's like, bro, get some steroids, bro. Do something. Become a heel again. You're not a face, bro. I can't with these guys. So at the end of the day,
Jungle Boy feels like a lost boy right now.
Yeah, he does.
What were you saying? Sorry, I cut you off there.
No, I'm just saying, what do you guys really think at the end of the day? Do you think he'll be a great heel, like a dominant thing, or what do you guys really think of? It's not cutting with him, you know, as a babyface.
Yeah, I don't honestly like. He's kind of in a weird spot, Andrew. Where like it doesn't feel like he was working as a babyface anymore, and it doesn't feel like he's working as a heel yet either. Like I don't. He's in this weird in between where like again, like it just seems like he's lost somewhere in the middle, where people definitely were losing interest in him as a babyface, I think, and I don't think people believe him as a heel yet. So I don't know where he's kind of just stuck in the middle. I don't know what he is. As DJ said, maybe he needs a mouthpiece. Maybe he needs something to kind of rug it up his look a little bit. I don't know what that is. I don't know. Can he grow a beard or something? Like he needs something to kind of just change his look, change his demeanor, change something. I'll put it like this. He seems very uncomfortable with what he's doing right now. He doesn't seem like he's natural at all.
Yeah, I was thinking recently. I just think about random wrestling things in my free time, but I was like thinking of wrestlers. Like I just don't believe in their current roles, and like All Ego, Ethan Page is one. I don't buy him at all, and Jungle Boy is one is two, and like Hook I don't really buy either because he looks uncomfortable. So like those names came to mind, and yeah, I mean Jungle Boy, it's just not him, I guess, whatever he's going for. I think he probably will turn on Hook before long, maybe, and this is maybe just out there because this came to my mind a couple seconds ago, but maybe he could join like the Don Callis stable, and that would give him something to do and let Callis do the talking for him. Maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I think he needs someone to do the talking for him at this point because when he cuts promos, he does not seem comfortable whatsoever. And like, you need to work on that. He's going to have to get better at it. But someone who can do the majority of the talking for him, with maybe him interjecting with a few lines here and there, is going to be better than him cutting promos for himself. At least right now.
I think there's potential there to like get like the sort of Dominic vibe going. I mean, not that level of like heat, but I think there is like some potential there to get to really be able to get underneath people's skin with him.
DJ, what else was on your mind?
Well, real quick, he definitely has a hook. I mean, hello, he is a spoiled rich kid, for God's sake. Remember, quote unquote, he was wrestling when he was 9. Oh, okay, buddy, like you're a sucky wrestler, you're wrestling since you're 9. Okay, buddy. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, Come on. That would be perfect for him. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. Tony sucks as booking. But my next thing is going into all these new shows they love to do. They have no tag teams. Oh, they have one great tag team in the whole thing, and they treat them like crap. I mean, I don't understand. They're going to keep on making shows, but no tag teams? I mean, I don't want to keep on seeing blood every 5 seconds, you know?
Yeah. I think that's where they got lost with the trios division, right?
Yeah.
Like, they – all of a sudden, they had six-man titles, and they had to do six-man titles, and what happened? The tag team titles got put on the back burner, which is kind of what Andrew and I talked about. Like, you can't invest in both, and especially when all your trios teams are just a tag team with a singles guy. You know, with the exception of House of Black now, like, there's really no trios teams. They're all just a tag team plus one. It was an unnecessary title to begin with. If you don't have the trios division, I think you focus way more on the tag team division. The tag team division seems a lot more important.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. Like, and we were talking about that ever since it like first came up. It's just like, this does not seem like a good idea. There's not a lot of trios tag teams out there. Like, it's going to hurt the tag division. And yeah, at this point, I would rather, like, I don't want them to do this, but I would rather have them kill the tag team titles and just like focus on the trios than do both of these. I would ideally rather just have the tag titles, but it's so silly to have three-man team and a two-man team, because like, why not just come up with four-man team? Like, literally,
yeah.
Like, what would be the difference? Or it's just silly.
I mean, I guess one of the things they could do at this point, if they are going to do a roster split, you could put one on one show and one on the other.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best thing they could do.
Probably the best thing they could do at this point, yeah. And at least you're focusing on the – because I think you're right, DJ. They haven't focused on the tag team division really at all. It's been a complete afterthought. And I think the biggest reason why is because they've got those trios titles.
Okay, my last thing is – let me say one thing. I'm very confused on this. Last week, before I start my question, I'm for real. They said Hulk Hogan is banned from EAW, right? Why is Hulk Hogan next thing on after EAW last Wednesday? What? Okay, buddy. That was confusing, but okay. The documentary of Hulk Hogan was Hulk Hogan's banned. I'm so confused on that one, but okay. My last thing is, at the end of the day, like, you know, I was talking about Jungle Boy and all these other people, like Sammy. All these guys are just pawns. At the end of the day, they're not ready for the championship that MJF is in. I feel like at the end of the day, it's definitely going to be Punk and MJF again. But the problem is, we've seen that dance again. I mean, is Punk only going to hold down, you know, Saturdays? I don't think so. I don't think that they're going to have to bring more talent, more guns to, you know, all these things, because now they're keep on adding shows. So at the end of the day, Punk can't keep on and MJF keep him on doing the dance. We need more stars, and they never want to build stars. I don't know what the heck they're doing.
Yeah, I my expectation is that Punk will probably work with Jericho first, just because they had that like big summit in Florida.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that's Punk's first match. But I do wonder, what are they going to do going towards the end of the summer, where you've got Punk and Jericho. You've also got you're all in and all out back-to-back weeks, right? So if you're going to build something around Punk, is it Punk Jericho at All in London, and then Punk MJF at All Out in Chicago the following week for the title, and maybe with some sort of stipulation that Jericho-Punk match is for the title match the next week to try to tie it together? I don't know. Because I think you could have MJF kind of cutting promos on both guys and then having a match on the London show determining the number one contender for the Chicago show, where it's only a week apart. That maybe also allows you to book that London show without having MJF wrestle. So because MJF doesn't wrestle very often. Obviously, you still want him there. But yeah, I don't really know. I mean, Andrew, who do you think Punk works with right away? I get the impression it's Jericho based upon everything we've learned so far.
Yeah, the two other rumors that have been like floated out there are Samoa Joe and Jay White. So I would like to see Jay White by quite a bit between those three. I think Joe would be interesting due to the history. Jericho, very little interest in seeing that.
I don't have a lot of interest in that either. I would rather see them rekindle the Joe feud because they have. I mean, that hasn't been touched in 20 years.
Yeah, I think both guys would be like motivated by that one. And Jericho just he hasn't had a good feud in a while, so I don't think you want to like put him with Punk. That'll just like cool him down a bit right away. So I would go Jay White. But I think the other thing too is like I think Adam Cole is probably up next, so they may hold that off until All In or All Out. So we may not see Punk in the title picture until the pay-per-view after that.
Potentially, I mean, which comes up pretty quickly in November. But DJ, who do you want to see? Who do you want to see Punk face out of the box here?
In the very beginning, definitely not Jericho. I want him to do like he did before. You know, remember with the Taz guys, he brought the he did little by little. I like to see like Jay White or maybe Samoa, somebody like that. Not Jericho. I can't like he just did something with Adam Cole when it was so horrible. He needs to retire. It's over for him, Jericho. You know what I'm saying? I can't with him anymore.
Yeah.
I'm done with him. I mean, did you see what he did backstage? He just, for no reason, just shot the fireball on a lizard. Like, you only use that for a certain situation. You just don't do that just to do that, have fun. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Well, he's a legend. Just ask him. They'll tell you.
So, yeah. Personally, I really think if Punk can work with the young guys, that's how we're going to build new stars. If he, you know what I'm saying? Don't keep on
working
with older guys. You know? That's what I feel like. I feel like he can do that, especially on the Saturdays. I feel like we can get more stars, you know? Maybe one of these days, maybe he can work with Jungle Boy. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? He already worked with Darby Allin. That was pretty decent. I don't know about Sammy because Sammy's not there, Punk's thing, but maybe Jungle Boy. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? But somebody, look what he did with Starks. I mean, that was a good match with him and Hobbs, mm-hmm. too. You know what I'm saying? So right then and there, I know he can, do it, but can the other guys do it? You know what I'm saying? So we'll see at the end of the day. We'll see what happens on Saturday because I want to see who comes out in the very beginning. Like you said, I hope maybe it'll be Jay White or somebody. Somebody new. Fresh blood.
It'd be fun. Yeah, it'd be fun. Anything else in your mind?
See what happens next week. So.
Sounds good. All right. Thanks for the call again. We'll talk to you next week.
Yep.
Awesome. Thanks again. All right. Yeah, the Punk thing is interesting because as we were saying earlier, too, it sounds like, Andrew, he's going to have some creative control, at least on himself.
Yeah.
I've read that Danielson's going to help book the show, which I think is good. That Punk is going to have a lot of say in creative as well, although it sounds like he's going to have a lot of say in his own creative. I don't know that he'll necessarily be booking angles for other people. But the fact that you've got some veterans in Danielson and Punk that are going to help book these shows – even if Punk is just booking his own angles, I think that is a positive step because it will take some of the load off of Tony. And I think you're going to have some veteran guys with different experiences who are going to bring, some different things to the table.
Yeah. I think that's for me been one of the more like exciting things to read in the past, couple months in AEW is Danielson and Punk like being more involved. And as we know, like Punk is a giant pain. And this may all fall apart really fast, but I think he's got a really good mind for wrestling. And it seems like he generally does want to get like younger talent over and like be in, programs where other people get to go over on him. He doesn't seem like a really selfish guy that way. And Danielson, same thing. Like, I mean, when he was, I believe, like leaving WWE, he was trying to get like Drew Gulak over. I think that's exciting to hear, and hopefully both guys contribute a lot and Punk paves himself.
Well, like, the interesting with Punk too is if you remember, like, yes, he was upset about what Hangman said about what he supposedly did with Colt Cabana, but.
Yeah.
One of the things that I always go back to in that rant that he had it all out all in last year was he jeopardized the first $1 million house in the history of this company. Like, it seemed like what he was most upset about was you jeopardized something for the company. Right. You, it, it, And he's worked with MJF. And yes, he didn't put MJF over in the end, but I think MJF improved considerably and was more over at the end of the feud, even though he lost, simply by working with Punk. And I agree with you. Like, he doesn't strike me as much as he does have flaws. He doesn't strike me as having that Hulk Hogan flaw where it's like, I'm not putting anybody over, brother. Like that's not one of his flaws.
No, I agree. Yeah, he seems to. I mean, and the things he was really crabby about, like the John Moxley like Rocky III storyline, and he's like, that sounds stupid. I mean, I agree with him on that.
I agree with him too. That was stupid.
He probably could have got. Yeah, and he could have gone about it probably in a nicer way, but like he realizes that was a stupid idea, which in my mind is like, okay, yeah, that's another example of him like, you know, having a good mind for being creative.
And who really wanted to do that, from what we understand, Moxley and Tony.
Right, yeah.
And it was a dumb idea. I remember at the time, I remember going to the pay-per-view, you and I are like, well, gee, is he hurt? And he's not going to wrestle on the pay-per-view? Because other than writing him off television, it made no sense to do what they did.
No, it's still one of the dumbest, I think, big angles they've done.
Yeah, it was very dumb. Let's get to emails. Yes, let's get to emails in one second. Let me just make sure that my audio is still good. It is still coming out of the right microphone. My AirPod fell out of my ear, Andrew, so then I heard a beep, and I was like, oh, I hope I didn't mess up my audio input. All right, let's get to emails again. AllElite Aftershow@gmail.com for the emails. If you want to call us, 515-605-9345. You can call us tonight. You can call us next Monday night when we're recording. Anytime, doesn't matter. We're open. The lines are open, as they say. All right, emails. Zach in Texas is up first. He says, fellas, let's just get this out of the way. CM Punk is officially on his way back to AEW. I'm exhausted with the man, but he's coming back nonetheless. Wade was a little more open-minded about Punk's future on the post-show last week. I, on the other hand, have seen enough to know that it's only a matter of time before Punk shows his ass again. The first collision is on June 17th. I give it until July 17th before he has another incident of some kind. Would you all like to take the over or under on that?
Oh,
he's
I
got
love
more.
It.
Or, I mean, I think I'm taking the over.
I'm taking the over.
I think he lasts past July 17th.
If I had to bet, though, I bet I would put 14 months. Maybe I'm more optimistic, but I do definitely think that's a distinct possibility that this does not work.
I am a little more optimistic that it will, only because the line that they're drawing here seems to be the Bucks have their show, Punk has his show. And if Punk's going to be heavily involved in the creative direction of Collision, and they seem to be shaping the rosters around, all right, these are Punk's guys, these are the Bucks guys, I think there'll be less friction involved. Like, he'll have less problems because he's going to be with people he likes to be with.
Interesting. Do you think he'll make it to the end of his contract then, whatever that may be, whether it's a year, 2 years from now?
It's an interesting question. Yeah, I think he does.
Interesting. Okay.
Like, 2 years? I don't know if his contract's up in 2 years, but I think he makes it 2 years. As long as they keep the split the way that they're keeping it. If Tony at some point goes, you know what, screw it, everybody's on every show, then I think it blows up quickly because I don't think he's going to be able to handle being around the people that he doesn't want to be around.
That's, yeah.
But if it is shaped in a way where it's like, because that's, I mean, from all indications are, that's kind of the line that they're drawing with the roster. It's like, well, here are the people that are more on Punk's side of things. Here are the people that are more on the Bucks side of things. And Hangman's side of things, and they're each going to basically have their own show, which, you know, also I think is going to be interesting because I think that's going to be highly motivating for someone like Punk to be like, screw these guys, I want to make sure we have the better show.
Right. Yeah.
Like, I want to show people that these guys are not a draw and that we have the better show. So I think that's an interesting element that's kind of at play as well. I kind of look at it with, you know, look at a guy like Samoa Joe, right? He's been around Samoa Joe forever. He was around Samoa Joe in Ring of Honor. You know, he hasn't, in recent years, well, Punk had issues at the end of his run in WWE. He had issues in AEW with three people, basically, the Bucks and Hangman. all indications are he didn't have issues with anybody else. He didn't really have any issues with his boss. He had issues with those three people. In WWE, he had issues with his boss and Triple H and other people. I don't remember him being labeled as like a locker room cancer in Ring of Honor.
No.
I remember him being – I remember there being things said about him when he was in OVW, but it was more along the lines that he was pissed that he had to go to OVW. He's like, I was a world champion. Like, you're making me go to your developmental territory first? Really? And he was just mad that he had to be there. But things settled down once he started working with Paul Heyman, and because he really liked working with Heyman. So, I think sometimes this idea that, oh, he's had blow-ups everywhere he's ever gone is a little bit overblown. I mean, he's had blow-ups at his two most recent stops, but really, if you look back, like, his only – he's had issues with Vince McMahon, Triple H, Matt and Nick Jackson, and Adam Page. And Colt Cabana. I guess you could put Colt Cabana on there. So it's like five or six people over a 20-plus year career that he really has issues with. I think that's probably pretty normal. Did he handle it the right way? No. But, I mean, it's like I think a lot of guys 20 years in the business probably have six guys that they never want to see again.
I mean, also, like, he – how long was he in – WWE, like 7 years? Eight?
He debuted, about 7 years. I think he debuted in, a little more than that. He debuted in 2006.
Yeah.
In ECW, and he went until 14. So he was in the main roster 8 years. He was in the main roster 8 years, and I think he was in developmental for another two or three. So he was probably 10 or 11 years in the company total.
Oh, wow. Okay, so if he can last that long, then it's not entirely inconceivable that he could hang on a couple years.
Especially, like, with WWE, he was younger and a little bit more, you have a little bit more attitude when you're younger, I think.
Usually, yeah. Punk is hard to tell, but yeah.
I don't know, yeah. All right, sorry, Zach, we'll continue with Zach's emails here. He says, speaking of Collision, the logo was clearly inspired by Nitro, but the video graphics in the commercial that aired during Dynamite last week were absolutely an homage to WCW Saturday Night. You guys saw that too, right? Andrew, did you – I honestly did not pay close enough attention.
I must have fast-forwarded. Yeah, I didn't watch it until, like, 9 my time, so I must have fast-forwarded through that commercial. I saw the logo. It's definitely inspired. Yeah.
You know what? I may have done that, too. I didn't start the show last Wednesday until after it was over. It was probably 10:30 or 11 p.m.
Yep.
So I was zipping through the commercials and may have missed that, but I'll go back and look. Zach continues on here. I thought Dynamite was a good bounce back from Double or Nothing. In some ways, AEW is a victim of its own success. Their pay-per-views have been such a quality that they set a high bar for themselves anytime a pay-per-view doesn't quite live up to that bar. And there's a big freakout. Dynamite was a nice reminder that AEW is just fine. Everyone had their working boots on. Some of the bumps Darby was taking in the tag match against the Gates of Agony, like the shoulder tackle out of the springboard coffin splash, were just absurd. The Don Callis Takeshita segment was something special, though. I haven't heard that level of sustained loud boos since the night after Roman Reigns beat The Undertaker. I'm here for an Elite versus Callis family feud. More immediate, though, I'm here for Omega versus Takeshita. Omega and Okada versus Takeshita and a partner. Omega and Obushi versus Takeshita and a partner. Just give me all of it. I think
that's clearly where it's trending. And it should. I mean, I'm sure it'll be good. Like I said, I think the Don Callis stuff is some of the most compelling things they're doing on TV right now.
Yeah, I think that was probably the best Dynamite in months, actually.
I would agree. Yeah, I think it's up there.
Yeah, and that Callis segment, I think, was one of the highlights of the year so far. So it's starting off great, and hopefully, it was super fun, just like the crowd, how much they hated him. So I'm hoping that continues. I have high hopes for this angle. Which a lot of the times I don't. I just kind of like watch the show and get interested in some things here and there. But like this is probably the most I've been interested in a storyline in the company and probably since Punk MJF, honestly.
Yeah. Zach continues here. He says, Rampage might have been the best Rampage ever.
Wow.
Vikingo is just spectacular. Him finishing Drillistico with the Rey Mysterio circa 1996 Hurricane Rana pin was a nice touch. Zack Sabre Jr. is a technical wizard. The way he bends people's limbs in directions they're not supposed to go just looks excruciating. Emi Sakura continues to have the stiffest women's matches anytime she's on TV. Seeing Shibata is always a treat. More of these kinds of rampages, please. One last thing. I know I won't it won't be a Matt classic, but if I'm going to be forced to see Karen Jarrett on my TV, I'm just going to need Aubrey Edwards to whoop her ass all over the arena, rearrange some of her facial features, maybe crush her voice box. Ooh,
wow.
Nothing too severe, but just enough to get her off TV.
Oh, yeah. Not too severe.
He's got a $5 challenge we'll get to in a little bit. Yeah, I mean, again, like from a match quality standpoint, Rampage was very good. I watched it yesterday, Sunday night.
Yeah.
Match quality-wise, Rampage was very good. But if you don't know who any of these guys are, do you care? That's, again, what I think you and I keep coming back to. Like it, and you can cater to both audiences. You can put on shows like that with really good matches and still take the time to let people who have no idea who Zack Sabre Jr. is and that he is a technical wizard, lay that out and let people know. Maybe a 30-second video package. Just something small. Something to tell me why I should care about this guy. And I like him. Like, I'm a Zack Sabre fan. I've watched a lot of his matches. He's excellent. But not everybody's like you and me, Andrew. And not everybody listens to podcasts like ours. Like, there's a bunch of people that watch this show every week who have no idea who he is. And you got to tell them. And they just don't do that enough.
No. I thought that triple threat match was great. I mean, it brought me back to, like, WCW 1997 matches. And Vikingo, apologies, I'm sure I'm butchering his name. But I was like, this guy is awesome, and they should be doing something with him, and he should be, like, in meaningful stories, and he should be on a journey. And I'm assuming he's not with the company full-time, and I don't even know. But, again, yeah, it's like, do I care who wins this match? And I found myself, like, not emotionally invested, just going, like, oh, man, that was amazing athleticism. So it was fun, but, yeah, missing substance.
Yes. Chad in Nebraska says, I'm sorry that Mike and Andrew, that this is a week late, but I was gone to a travel softball tournament for my oldest. But I wanted to send this in, especially with the disappointment overall that was Double or Nothing. If you guys want some good, solid wrestling with a couple of fantastic matches, and just because Mike swore last week, did I swear last week?
maybe.
I don't even remember
doing
it.
I doubt it, but
Chad, I like it, though. Like I said, sometimes it's just the way I talk. But a couple of fantastic matches, and just because Mike swore last week, a batshit crazy main event and final angle to end the show, you guys need to watch Under Siege. Two absolute fantastic matches were Ace Austin and Chris Bay versus Subculture and Chris Sabin versus Trey Miguel. But the main event was a complete hardcore train wreck, and you barely were able to see Steve Macklin's face because it was covered in blood, and PCO, who already makes me nervous when he wrestles because he's a 55-year-old man who just flips from the top rope onto the concrete floor, he legit got his mouth stapled shut, and they showed him taking the staples out. I heard about this, Andrew. I have not watched it.
I have not watched that either, but that sounds crazy.
Sounds awful, yeah. Awful, like painful.
Yeah.
You also had a good semi-main event, which was most likely Jordan Grace's last match in Impact with a loss to Deonna Purrazzo. Overall, I can't stress how good this show was. And just for Andrew, you had Alex Shelley becoming the number one contender. Chad in Nebraska. P.S. Chad in Nebraska here is hoping that Darby gets kidnapped by the Yeti when he climbs Mount Everest, and also that Danhausen gets fired.
Wow. Did he mean like Ron Reese Yeti? Or like
I was
going
to say, yeah, the WCW or the actual Yeti. I don't know.
Did you see that Darby Allin wants to put an AEW flag on?
Of course he does. Of course he does.
Yeah.
Why not? Let him.
Why not?
One more email. Let's see. This is from Jose in Golden Valley. He says, I don't want to open that app. I'm opening my calendar app and my Maps app. Jose from Golden Valley, I've been watching the media scrums of the early AEW pay-per-view shows. Tony Khan had the Rick Moranis gimmick going on at one point. What happened to this guy over the course of the last few years? Sure, he looks awkward, but he used to look somewhat respectable in kind of a nerdy way. Today and for the past 2 years, he's looked like an unhinged psycho adult child who never grew out of his teenage.
Wow.
Sorry. Again, I don't read these ahead of time. So sometimes when you read things like unhinged psycho adult child, I do get it tickles me. like, seriously, something happened to this guy to turn him into an insufferable clown. Did Britt tell him his hair would look cute if he grew it out like an alpaca and that he should wear pajamas? That little cowboy outfit he wore at Double or Nothing was like Ralphie in A Christmas Story. the most stacked Rampage in, okay, he goes on with another point here, I think. But, yeah, I would say his style choices are interesting.
Yeah.
The best is that everybody was like, that Double or Nothing, I heard people that were like, oh, I thought because of the Owen Hart thing, he was coming out dressed as a Mountie.
I question what, yeah, I was like, oh, I wish he wouldn't have taken part in this one. That's kind of a, it's kind of awkward.
Yeah, I think he just, again, Tony, just stay off TV. Some people aren't supposed to be on television.
I don't think his pre-taped ones are super bad. Like, you know.
No, I agree.
Yeah, like the ROH announcement and the infamous 9 days from tonight, like, much better. But, yeah, it's still a little odd, yeah.
And I think he just gets so supercharged up, like, in front of the live camera. Like, you just pre-tape everything, because at least you can do, like, multiple takes, and you
yeah.
can do something that, you know, will be okay. Sorry. Okay, Jose continues. He says, the most stacked Rampage in some time, and not even 400,000 viewers. SmackDown is doing 2.9 million, which is insane. 2.9 million viewers for the final 15 minutes of SmackDown show with the Bloodline is absolutely crazy. Roman is my tribal chief, Oos. This is, again, according to Jose. The fact that they're actually celebrating Karen and Aubrey getting in the ring and not realizing what a disaster this is going to be truly tells you how delusional they are. This will be their Charmel versus Jenna Maraska moment.
Yeah, I'm afraid of that.
Lastly, Andrew, were you ever close to being part of the Radicals? Like, jump that cultaholics crew did from what culture? Any cool Simon Miller interactions?
I was gone from what culture before they jumped. But I like, remember...
I don't know the stories. What happened here? I don't know the reference.
Oh, so I used to do videos for, what culture.
I remember that. Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah. And then I was their least popular person by far, but their heavy hitters were like Adam Blompied, Jack the Jobber, Adam Pacitti and King, I'm blanking on his name, Paul, King Ross or something. And then they all left What Culture at the same time to form Cultaholic.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And by that point, I wasn't close to any of those guys. I mean, now and then I think we like messaged a couple messages here on Twitter. And I think Blompied did the forward to like my first like Worst of the Year book in like 2014. And I never met Simon and I never got to go over there. Apparently, at one point they used to have their own like promotion and there was talk.
I do remember that. Yes.
Yeah. And they spent a ton of money. Like Jim Ross is there. Like Kurt Angle was there. There was briefly talks of bringing me over there random to manage Eugene against, I don't remember who it would have been against. It would have been one of the other personalities and I think a wrestler of their choice. But that didn't happen. But I almost got to be an evil heel manager for one night. Because I knew Nick Dinsmore.
I would have been
terrified, but I probably would have done it. But I knew Nick Dinsmore and he was in a couple of my videos. But anyways, the original question, Simon, I recall, I think, getting a message or two. But and he seemed super nice. Seems like a really good dude. But no, didn't ever meet him.
And then Jose has a $5 challenge. Let me try that again. Speaking of doing pre-tapes, sorry, like I'm talking about Tony here. Jose has a $5 challenge for us as well, which we will get to. Actually, we might as well get to it now.
Let's do it.
Are you opposed? Are you opposed? No objections?
I'm flexing right now for the music. I'm getting ready.
All right. Well, then here we go.
$5 challenge. I can't flex that long.
It's the laugh at the end that gets me.
Every time I'm like,
all right, Zach in Texas is first. He says, sticking with the WCW theme, I'm going to test your knowledge of that company's many factions.
Oh, this is my bread and butter.
All right. I'm going to give you three members, and you have to give me the faction name. Good luck, Zach in Texas. So we're getting three names, and we have to give him the faction name.
Love it.
Faction number one, Terrence Taylor, Thomas Rich, and Richard Morton.
Okay, I'm off to a bad start. I can't remember. I have
absolutely no idea.
Who are these? Who are they again? Richard Morton.
Terrence. I assume it's Ricky Morton, Tommy Rich, and Terry Taylor. But the official names were Terrence Taylor, Thomas Rich, and Richard Morton.
Oh yeah, wasn't there a Blue Bloods stable? But I want to say that was probably Regal and somebody else.
Yeah, Regal was. There was a Blue Blood stable. That was definitely Regal and somebody.
Was this the one with Alexandra York?
I don't know. I have no recollection of this at all.
What was the name of that stable? That's the one I can only... Because I think... No, it was like Rotunda was in that one. I got the Yorkies.
The Yorkies. Okay. I like that. I have no guesses, so. The Yorkies. Number two, Swole, Conan, Rey Mysterio Jr.
That was the No Limit Soldiers.
No Limit Soldiers. Number three, Bunkhouse Buck, Arn Anderson, and Dick Slater.
Oh, okay. So early.
Numbers of what? Yeah, very early.
Early 90s, I guess, is not my bread and butter. I feel like I was
not the Four Horsemen. Can I guess that? If I guess what it wasn't, is that a correct answer?
The Three Cowmen.
Three Cowmen? Okay. I like it. Oh, I like it. I think it's good. It's a good name for a stable. Number four. You might know this one, though. This one might be in the wheelhouse. Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, Dean Malenko. We're three members of what?
The Revolution, along with Benoit and Asia. There we go. Now I feel better.
Number five, Bobby Eaton, Medusa, and Steve Austin. Wasn't that Heyman's?
Is that Dangerous Alliance?
The Dangerous Alliance? I think they were all in the Dangerous Alliance. I know Medusa and Steve Austin were.
Yeah, I like that.
I don't know if Bobby Eaton was, but I know that Medusa and Steve Austin were. Okay. Go with the Dangerous Alliance. Okay, number one, Terrence Taylor, Thomas Rich, Richard Morton. We went with the Yorkies. You were actually close, Andrew. The York Foundation.
Oh, it was that group.
Other members included Michael Wall Street,
yes.
Mike Rotunda, and Alexander York. So you were right. We just didn't have the name. Swole, Conan, Rey Mysterio Jr. They were the No Limit Soldiers. That is a correct answer, along with Brad Armstrong and Master P. Number three, we had the Cowmen. Oh, sorry, three Cowmen as being Bunkhouse Buck, Arn Anderson, and Dick Slater. The other members of this stable, before I give you the name, were Meng, Colonel Robert Parker, and Terry Funk. They were known as the Stud Stable.
Oh, zero memory of that group.
Same here. The Revolution, you were right on there with Perry Saturn, Shane Douglas, and Dean Malenko. I get it now. You said Benoit was part of that group, right?
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, because he has other name redacted,
oh.
Which makes sense. And then Steve Austin, Bobby Eaton, Medusa were three members of? You were right, the Dangerous Alliance. Arn Anderson, Larry Zbyszko, Rick Rude, and, of course, Paul E. Dangerously. So three out of five, Andrew.
I mean, I feel the Three Cowmen should have been their name. But...
Three Cowmen does sound like a name. Like it should be that. Three Cowmen. It sounds better than the Stud Stable.
Yeah, ridiculous.
All right, let's go to Chad in Nebraska. He says, this week's theme is our favorite X Division wrestler, Amazing Red.
Nice. Okay.
How awesome, this is not part of the $5 challenge, but how awesome, he says, would a stable have been managed by Ernest the Cat Miller and have it including Amazing Red, Sonny Siaki, and Rob Terry?
God, I can't even, words can't even express what that would do to me.
You know what we call that, Chad? We call that a dream come true. That's what it would be.
That's a real stud stable right there.
Exactly. That's the stud stable right there. Number one in Chad's Amazing Red five-year challenge. How many times did Amazing Red hold the X Division title?
Two. That's a guess.
Ah, that's a guess that I was going to have, too. I was going to say two was the first number that came to my head. Who did Amazing Red hold the NWA tag team title with? Didn't we have this question already?
Sounds sneaky, yeah. Oh, yeah, that does sound familiar.
I just don't remember the answer.
I don't either.
Amazing Red, NWA tag team title. Who's his partner? Obviously, it must have been some other X Division guy.
Yeah, I was thinking like a Michael Shane or Kazarian or Saban. You like any of those?
How do you feel about Kazarian?
Yeah.
Okay. Number three, who in the TNA Impact canon is Amazing Red's brother?
Crimson.
I don't remember that at all.
I forgot about
that. I remember
that.
Crimson.
Yeah, that's
but
how
I don't
we came
remember
into
them,
the...
them saying he was Amazing Red's brother.
Yeah, he was like his big brother. I totally forgot about that.
Number four, who won Amazing Red's last match in Impact, which was an Ultimate X match in 2011?
So I'm guessing it's not Amazing Red, which is our go-to answer.
Yeah, I know. It's a very good point.
I know 2011, I guess like Homicide was around then.
Yeah, he was. Homicide, oh, I like that as a guess.
Okay, yeah, let's go Homicide.
And number five, who was Amazing Red's tag team partner in the Team 3D Tag Team Invitational in 2009? Jeez.
I bet it was somebody goofy.
Curry Man?
I was going to say Curry Man, yeah.
So let's go with that, okay. Curry Man, all right. How many times did Amazing Red hold the exhibition title? We said two. The correct answer, three.
No.
Who did Amazing Red hold the NWA Tag Team titles with? We said Kazarian. Correct answer, Jerry Lynn.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Crimson was Amazing Red's brother, so we do have that one correct. Number four, who won Amazing Red's last match in TNA Impact, which was an Ultimate X match in 2011? We had Homicide. The correct answer was Alex Shelley.
I'm disappointed.
And number five, who was Amazing Red's tag team partner in the Team 3D Tag Team Invitational in 2009? We had Curry Man. We were on the right track, I feel like, here. The correct answer was Suicide.
Oh, okay. That makes sense, because now that I'm picturing it, like, I know Curry Man and I think Shark Boy were a team for a bit, and they had a feud, like a brief silly match, like a fish fighter or something with them.
Yes, yes. I do remember that, actually. okay. All right. So that's now one out of five and three out of five. So we're 4 out of 10 in total.
Okay. So we got to go 5 for 5.
Here, yeah, with Jose's. Yeah. So Jose says, I'm going to press pause on the mainstream questions for this week.
Wow.
Since you guys worship Rob Terry as a second coming, let's see how well you guys know your boy. Rob Terry trivia for true worshipers.
Love it.
What Easy. Former world champion was Rob Terry considered to be muscle for, but it never happened? I assume he means like bodyguard, so I would assume to be the muscle for. Yeah, I think he means like to.
Okay.
Rob Terry was considered to be the like basically be the muscle for somebody, but it never happened.
Former world champ. So I would lean towards somebody smaller, like an AJ
yep.
Styles.
Yes.
Or. Because they had him as a heel a couple times. Maybe EC3. Man, I don't know if those timelines quite match up.
I don't know if those match up either.
Yeah. Daniels was never a champ.
Styles is the only one that makes sense because he would have been on the smaller side.
Yeah. Okay.
Right.
The only other one I can think of would be like Jeff Hardy because I think that was, they gave, my reasoning in my head is like, Bischoff gave Terry a big push, and Hardy was around then, and they had that giant Immortal group, but might be safer to go.
Oh, maybe.
Styles.
No, I you've sold me on Hardy, I think.
Hardy? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Number two, Big Rob and other TNA performers appeared on what MTV series in 2012? I don't remember any MTV series. Was Cribs around then?
Take a look at Rob Jerry's house.
Here's my apartment. Pimp My Ride.
yeah, that might be that. I was undressed, and I'm like, no, I think that was long gone by then.
Total Request Live.
TRL. The Tom Green Show.
I don't even know. Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore. I mean, they did
Wouldn't
have
that
the whole.
Kind of fit?
They had the cookie Robbie T thing.
It might be. I mean, I was half joking, but I wonder if that fits. I wonder if it is the Jersey Shore.
I'm fine with that. It was on then.
Yeah. They made a special guest appearance or something. All right, we'll go Jersey Shore. Number three, Rob Terry won the TNA Global Championship at a TNA house show in Cardiff, Wales in 2010 before dropping it to AJ Styles on an episode of Impact in July 2010. How many days did Big Rob Terry reign supreme of the globe?
Oh, that's a brutal one. I feel like
less than 365. If he won it in 2010 and then dropped it in July of 2010, less than 365.
Yeah. Is this like a trick question where it would be like one day sort of thing, or?
That's what I'm wondering.
Or a week or something. I bet it's a week or a day. I don't know. A day?
A day. I think a day works.
Okay.
One day. Because, you know, he probably won it at a house show and then lost it like at a TV taping in England or something.
Yeah.
Number four, Big Rob played Rob, the contract killer, in what 2010 film? No, absolutely no idea. I didn't even know Rob Terry was in a film.
Let's see. What films came out in 2010? Where?
The Hangover?
Sure.
Was that 2010?
Let's see. How old was it? 20?
Oh, that would have been, that might be Hangover 2.
we could do it to Hangover 2.
Hangover 2. Okay. Number five, the highest star rating for a Rob Terry match ever from Dave Meltzer was 3 stars.
Oh.
What pay-per-view match was it? The question here could have been name a single Rob Terry pay-per-view match. And I still don't think I've gotten it right.
My guess would be like a 6-man with the British Invasion versus like...
True.
Who did they?
Where he was some sort of 6-man where he wasn't really involved in the match.
Yeah, because I'm guessing his match with like Orlando Jordan didn't get 3 stars.
Yeah. Okay. So British Invasion versus
would have been like a 3-man team then.
3-man team. Yeah.
Or just like a tag team and another person.
Motor City Machine Guns and somebody else.
And Amazing Red.
Let's do that. Let's do that. Just to drive people crazy. Okay.
It's gotta be.
Well, let's see how well we know Rob Terry. Number one, when former world champion was Rob Terry considered to be the muscle for, but it never happened. We had Jeff Hardy. The correct answer. I'm gonna have to Google this to confirm. Chris Jericho.
What?
Hold on.
This is a full stop right here. I mean, it should still happen. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah. According to his autobiography, Chris Jericho wanted Rob Terry to be his protege when he was wrestling in FCW, but he was released before it could ever happen, and the role was given to Lance Cade.
Oh, wow.
I would have only figured TNA. I never would have guessed. A WWE deal with that.
That's some fun trivia.
I agree. Was he technically Rob Terry yet at that point, though?
Mm.
See, maybe that's our way out of that question.
Yeah.
Number two, Big Rob, another Tina performance appeared on what MTV series in 2012? We had the Jersey Shore. The correct answer, though, was Made. I remember that series.
Oh, vaguely.
They were training someone to become a wrestler.
Yeah, okay. That makes sense.
Number three, Rob Terry won the TNA Global Championship at a TNA house show in Cardiff, Wales in 2010 before dropping it to AJ Styles on an episode of Impact in July of 2010. How many days did Big Rob reign supreme of the globe? We had 1 day. The correct answer, 167 days.
Really? That's almost 6 months.
That's crazy.
That's a great run.
Yeah, in his defense, he probably won the title and then they referenced it once on TV and he was never on TV for 6 months and then came back and lost it.
Yeah.
Seems to be how the global championship worked at the time. Big Rob played Rob the Contract Killer in what 2010 film? We had The Hangover Part 2. The correct answer, a film I've never heard of, On the Arm?
Huh. I'll have to watch it this weekend, though, if Big Rob's in it.
There we go. 100%. Yep. You were on the right track with this last one that we had, Drew. The highest star rating Rob Terry ever received from Dave Meltzer was 3 stars. What pay-per-view match was it? We were talking about a 6-man because we said, hey, it's probably not him in the match, right? So British Invasion versus we just guessed the Motor City Machine Guns in Amazing Red because why wouldn't we guess Amazing Red? The correct answer was a tag team match. Victory Road 2010, AJ Styles and Frankie Kazarian against Rob Terry and Samoa Joe.
Whoa. I have no recollection of Joe and Terry teaming.
Neither do I.
I like it, though.
But we were on the right track with the whole tag team thing. It doesn't make sense.
Did he shut us out again 2 weeks in a row?
That's another 0-5. Yeah, we got to figure out something here. We're not doing well.
Yeah.
Got to figure it out. It's just back to the drawing board, you know? It's a tough day. Everybody has them. It's been 2 weeks in a row for us, but we'll go back. We'll train. We'll try to get better and come back next week. Ready to compete again, you know?
Read random articles on Rob Terry. What I should be doing in my 100%. Free time.
Just because we're ready to go. Andrew, anything else we need to talk about?
Well, if you got a little left in you.
I always have a little left in me.
Then I got 5 questions for you and a $5 opportunity.
Okay. All right. Time to dial back in after the shutout.
Dial back in. Take a deep breath.
All right.
Can't get any worse than what we just did.
That is true. The worst I can do is tie the worst we just did.
What just happened.
Okay.
This week on the $5 challenge, the theme is, it is hot. It is hot outside. It's muggy, so we're going with heat. We're hot. Uh-oh. Yeah. Uh-oh. Well, there is a Sunday night heat question, actually. But it's not the full thing. Question number one.
Latino heat?
He actually comes up, too. Yeah.
Harlem Heat?
Yes.
There's so much heat. Okay. I'm ready.
Sunday Night Heat debuted on August 2nd, 1998. Which current AEW wrestler and current WWE wrestler faced off in the first match?
Whoa. The first match ever on Sunday Night Heat.
Yeah.
And we're saying that there was a current AEW wrestler and a current WWE wrestler that wrestled on the show?
They wrestled in the first match, yes.
Okay. So, trying to think who could have been around then.
A mere 25 years ago.
Sunday Night Heat. Okay. And one's currently in WWE and one currently in AEW.
Correct.
The current AEW wrestler, the only one that comes to mind has got to be Goldust. So Dustin Rhodes.
Okay.
And then... current, who in WWE is old enough to have been on the first Heat? Because Triple H obviously is not active anymore. I don't think you're rolling in a trick question and having to be in like Shane or something like that.
No. I'll give you that. It's an active wrestler.
Active wrestler, okay. Oh, the only person I think that was even around then, and she's, I have Raw on as we were recording this, is Trish Stratus? She's in somebody's corner right now, so I'm going to go with Trish Stratus. Because Heat would have been debuted in 99, I think, probably. Debuted.
Nice. Yeah.
So, yeah. I'll say Trish.
Okay.
Trish and Dustin Rhodes.
Dustin Rhodes, that's a hell of an opener. I would just check my Sling app. Again, it froze.
Hold on. Wait. They wrestled each other, right?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Let me scratch Trish then. I don't think Goldust wrestled.
You don't remember that classic Goldust versus Trish Stratus? Oh, man.
Who else is old enough? Let me scratch Trish. Who else is old enough? Or do I scratch Dustin and is it another woman? No, AEW doesn't have any women on their roster that would have wrestled Trish. So it has to be a men's match. So let's keep Dustin in there. And let's go Dustin against... let's go Dustin against Edge.
All right, taking out Trish Stratus, just making sure, and we'll put in Edge. All right.
Edge is the only other guy I can think of that's old enough to have been around that long.
Question number two. Who did the former Alundra Blaze compete against in her WCW pay-per-view return in 1996? So after she threw away the title, who did she face in her first pay-per-view?
Okay. She was just Medusa at this point, right?
She was Medusa, correct. Yep.
Okay. So she was Alundra, yeah, you're right. Alundra Blaze throws a title away. I think they brought in one of the women that she also wrestled in WWF towards the end of her run in WWF, the very well-known Japanese star, Bull Nakano. Who I think is still wrestling, by the way. Or might be an MMA or something like that.
Oh, that's crazy.
Something crazy.
Question number three, Latino Heat, Eddie Guerrero, held WWE Tag Team Gold with three different partners in WWE. Well, I guess I already said that. Who were they? Who were Eddie Guerrero's three Tag Team partners he won gold with?
I have a vague recollection of him actually holding the Tag Team Championships with China back when they were doing their whole thing together. I feel like there's a bunch of obvious answers here because of the people that he had associated himself with. So let's go. I do vaguely remember China, I think. Although China may have been like Intercontinental Champion or something at that time. I don't really remember. There was a belt involved. But I'm still going to say China. I'm going to say Chavo. And I'm going to say Perry Saturn.
Perry Saturn. Okay. Question number four. Harlem Heat members Booker T and Stevie Ray combined held the WCW title seven times. How many times did each man hold the belt?
Stevie Ray was a WCW world champion?
TV title.
Oh, TV title. Okay. Combined seven times. I'm going to have to break it. I mean, look, I know this is not what this is in reference to, but just because I can't get out of my head, I'm going to say Booker T 5 and Stevie Ray 2.
Stevie 2. And the final question, which two wrestlers competed in the only Inferno match to ever air on SmackDown? Yeah.
I don't remember there being an Inferno match on SmackDown. Okay, so it would have had to have been someone that was covered, right? Because that's how they accomplished the gimmick. you can't just have guys out there that aren't covered, or else you're burning people alive. So I think it's going to be obviously Kane, because Kane was in, I think, mostly all of them, or all of them. I know it wasn't Kane and The Undertaker. I do have a recollection of there being a Kane versus MVP Inferno match, because MVP also had like the full bodysuit thing going on. So I'm going to guess Kane and MVP.
All right. Five questions, five answers. Well, actually more than five, but because there's multiple names. But are you locked in?
Yeah, I think I'm locked in. I'm going to lock in right now.
Oh, I thought you were going to hit a sound effect.
So was I. I didn't have one queued up. yeah,
it's very dramatic.
I'm going to lock in. I'm going to lock in now.
Oh no! It's the cops! Everyone, be cool.
Huh. That works. Well, tonight,
all things considered, I think it does.
I'm going to give you 1.3333 repeating.
Ooh, okay. One and a third.
We'll run through them all. Which current AEW wrestler and current WWE wrestler faced off in the first Sunday Night Heat match ever? You guessed Dustin Rhodes versus Edge. You got half right.
This
with
is the one I think I got right. Oh, I got half a point.
You got
this
half
one?
A point for this one. Yeah.
Oh, I was gonna say this is the one I think I got right, because I don't know who else would have been wrestling.
Oh, you're gonna maybe kick yourself, but maybe not. It was Edge versus Double J, Jeff Jarrett.
Oh, that stupid idiot. Yeah. I forgot he's on TV again. Oh. We were just talking about his wife too.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah, I should have got that.
Hey, I think Goldust worked as well. That was a good choice. Who did the former Alundra Blaze compete against in her WCW pay-per-view return? You guessed Bull Nakano. This is maybe a little bit of a trick question. It was actually Colonel Robert Parker.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't remember that at all.
Number three, Latino Heat. Eddie Guerrero held WWE Tag Team Gold with three different partners. Who were they? You guessed China, Chavo Guerrero, and Perry Saturn. Chavo is correct. The other two were Rey Mysterio and Tajiri.
Interesting. So I bet then when China and Eddie Guerrero were a thing on TV, that must have been when China won the Intercontinental title or something like that, because there were belts involved.
Yeah, it was either that or he had the European or something.
Something like that, yeah.
I remember
them driving out in the car and having the belts on, like, the hood. That's what I was envisioning in my head. That's why I thought it was the tag team titles. But.
Oh, and as soon as you said that, too, I had to, like, Google this to make sure I was right, because I was like, oh, crap, did they win the tag titles? But
no. Okay. I'll have to look that up. I definitely think there were belts involved. That was probably the wrong titles, that's all.
It happens. Harlem Heat members Booker T and Stevie Ray combined held the WCW title seven times. How many times did each man hold the title? You guessed Booker five times. Stevie Ray twice. It was actually Booker six, Stevie once.
Unbelievable. So he wasn't a five-time TV champion.
I mean, you got to do it twice more.
That's true. Five-time.
Thank you. No, so that one was a little tricky as well. Oh,
my OCD kind of kicked in there.
Yeah.
I also felt it.
We would have got letters, yeah. But actual physical letters. Number five. Which two wrestlers competed in the only Inferno match to ever air on SmackDown? You guessed Kane MVP. They did fight in a pay-per-view, and I will give you half for Kane, but it was actually Triple H and Kane.
Really? So that must have been very early, or like an early, early SmackDown.
Yeah, and believe it or not, Kane lost. Triple H was not set on fire.
Amazing. Amazing. All right, so one and a third.
Yeah. You got two and a third last week, so you're kind of on a kick.
I'm trending down.
Well, it's a hot one out there. It's tough.
It's actually, it was very hot all of last week here in the Boston area.
Yeah.
And then on Saturday and Sunday, it was 50 degrees and raining all weekend.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. It was, I'm not joking, it was 94 degrees on Friday. And on Saturday, it was 50 and raining.
That's not even right. That's not fair.
No, no. We had a pretty big thunderstorm Friday night. As you can imagine, which prompted the temperature to drop 40 degrees in like an hour and a half.
Oh, I guess that makes sense. Too cold, though.
Yeah, for June, definitely. Andrew, where else can people find you?
You can find me on the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast, working on a new episode this month. We've got some scripts coming up for the summer. But before then, you can check out the previous 50 or so episodes. That is the Unexpected Storytelling Podcast.
You can find me on Twitter, at Torching Man. You can also email the show, allelitafter@gmail.com. If you want to call us Monday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern, we start recording the show. I will tweet out a link to the show at Torch McMahon. It usually gets retweeted by the Torch account. So if you are on Twitter and you see the link, you can jump on there and listen. Also, though, anytime after 9 p.m. on Mondays, all you got to do is dial 515-605-9345. And that lets us know that you want to get on the show, and we will bring you on, just as we did DJ in Miami earlier tonight. So you can do that next week if you are so inclined. If not, Andrew and I will talk to you next week. So enjoy all of the wrestling. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.